Welcome back to the Sustainable Carolina podcast. Today, we're talking with Ella Feathers. Ella is a senior this year, and she's majoring in economics and environmental studies on the sustainability track. She's also minoring in media and journalism and has plans next year to continue that work in the university's Plus One program, which we'll talk about later. I started working here at Sustainable Carolina in January 2022, and Ella, I'm pretty sure you're the first student name that I heard mentioned in regards to sustainability on campus. I think that says something about your work ethic and your commitment to sustainability. At that time, I think you were about to join the Carolina Sustainability Council, even though you've passed your council spot on to another member of student government at this point. You still have your hands in many different sustainability organizations and initiatives. We're so happy to have you here today, Ella. Thanks for being with us.
Great. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Maybe the best place to start is just talking about the culture of sustainability at Carolina. I think, you know, going to conferences as a sustainability professional, we meet a lot of different people from universities and colleges, and sustainability looks a little bit different everywhere. There's the same common threads of like focusing on waste and emissions and water use, but how it actually functions at your university really does vary.
I think that the sustainability culture here is really collaborative, which is something that, you know, I don't think you can say about every college campus. I think that honestly, that's kind of a theme that I see throughout Carolina, is that instead of being competitive with each other or wondering who can make the biggest individual impact, everybody's wondering how do we make the biggest collective impact. And I think it really shows in our work and what we've been able to accomplish through student government, through RESPC, through various student organizations that I'm sure we'll get more into later on in this podcast. You know, everybody in the sustainability world in Carolina, which is really big, even though sometimes it feels really small. I mean, we all have common goals and common values, and it's really great to see how we can come together to try to realize those in a very collaborative way. I think that there isn't a lot of selfishness in the sustainability space. And really just that drive to improve the university in regards to sustainability. I really love to see that here. And I think that extends not only between students, but also with professors. So many of my professors have been receptive to hearing about the student government sustainability work that we're doing or sustainability events that we're putting on and been willing to lend their expertise and their time. We're focusing on problems that are a lot bigger than any of us individually. And so it's really great to see how everybody comes together to try to tackle these problems. And the other thing that I think I'll say about it is that it's just a really friendly space. It's a really nice place to be. It's not like you're just seeing people in a student government meeting and never talking to them outside of class. It's, you know, you're waving to these people on the quad, you're seeing them out on Franklin Street when, you know, we were rushing Franklin. It's not like we're just doing this work together. We're also being students together and experiencing Carolina together. And I really love that aspect of it too.
Yeah. And I think what you just said would put a lot of students at ease, students coming into Carolina or students that aren't yet involved in sustainability related organizations that want to be. That idea that there's a community outside of the work that you're all committed to is really a nice thing that you can't always find on a college campus. When you were coming into Carolina, did you have an idea of the sustainability organizations that you might want to be a part of? Did you even, you know, think you would be a part of as many organizations as you are?
And when I came to college, campus was basically shut down because of COVID. So my second semester, sophomore year, I got involved with RESPC, the Renewable Energy Special Projects Committee. And through there, I met some people that encouraged me to get involved with student government. And that's really how I got my foot in the door of all of these organizations. So I would say no, I did not imagine myself in this space. When I came to college, I kind of wanted to start with a clean slate and take some time to figure out what it is that I actually think I want to be spending my time doing, as opposed to, you know, what can I spend my time doing that's going to look good on my resume? You know, it was really kind of a big mindset shift. And so it took me a while to figure out that this is the space that I wanted to spend a lot of my time and effort in. But I think it's also really good. You know, I really only got involved about halfway through college. And even with that, I feel like I've been able to make a lot of connections and contribute to making a big impact at Carolina in these last 2 years.
And so I'm thinking about the Renewable Energy Special Projects Committee, which is tasked with finding a way to spend that renewable energy student fee that all students pay with their tuition. And I'm thinking about the connection between that work and the Student Government Department of Environmental Affairs. Last year, there was the Energy Transition Town Hall, which you were the moderator for, which is kind of my worst nightmare, is like moderating a session like that. Like, you did a great job and you were one of the main drivers behind that event. Can you tell me what the reasoning was for, you know, even wanting to have that event in the first place and how you went about making sure you got the right people in the room talking?
One thing that I noticed when in my late sophomore year, I was trying to become a lot more informed about campus sustainability was that it's difficult to get informed and it's difficult to know where to look to find all of the correct and up-to-date information on UNC's climate performance and climate commitments. And now, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, I know that a lot of this is probably available on Sustainable Carolina's website. But at the time, as somebody who is really new to the space, it's really difficult to know where to look. And so my intention in creating and putting on the Energy Transition Town Hall was to kind of remove that barrier and make it easier for people who were in the same position that I was in at the end of my sophomore year, where you want to learn, but you don't know the best way to learn. Sustainable Carolina and the Renewable Energy Special Projects Committee were obvious partners. It honestly came together very organically. Everybody was very excited to put on this event, which I think kind of speaks to all of the collaborators understanding that there is this project on campus and at the same time wanting to do whatever we can to remedy it.
And to be fair, like you mentioned, you know, this is stuff you could have found on Sustainable Carolina's website. Sustainable Carolina came into existence in 2020, which, you know, is the same time you were coming into college. And I feel like people didn't really know about the work that we were doing and the fact that we had moved out of operations and into the academic side of things. There is a reason that it was a little bit difficult to figure out, you know, who are the big players in this. But you obviously did a great job because you had a second town hall this past November. I'm curious if you took anything from the first town hall and applied it to this one. Were there things that you definitely knew you wanted to do differently?
Yeah, I think the first town hall that we did was really successful for kind of laying that foundation. Every year there's a new class of students coming in that are going to have the exact same questions, the exact same struggles. And so there wasn't that much that I wanted to change because I figured, you know, year after year, we're always going to have some version of that sustainability communications problem and getting people over that information hump. You know, the purpose of the event was not changing, but I did notice in the first event that people had more questions than we had time for. So that was something that I think we did better at in the second event was portioning the time to be closer to a 50-50 split of presentation and getting everybody on the same page and then allowing everybody to ask their questions.
I remember when, you know, we were planning for this town hall event, we all met Sustainable Carolina, Renewable Energy Special Projects Committee, Student Government. We all met to kind of talk through, you know, how the event would go. And I remember you just saying how much coursework and extracurriculars, you know, you had on your plate at that point in time. And I'm sure nothing has changed at this point in the year. Senior year, especially spring, is always busy soaking up, you know, campus, but also you have a million projects to finish and wrap up. This is something I forget because I graduated in 2014, which is wild to me that it's been a decade. Do you have a method for managing your time?
Google Calendar is my best friend. Everything is in my Google Calendar. And if it's not in my Google Calendar, there's a decent chance that, you know, I'll remember last minute and have to move everything around. I was thinking about this earlier, actually. If I had gone to college like 20 years ago, it might be a very different story in terms of, what I'm able to do and what groups I'm able to contribute to, just because of the time management aspect. Mentally, it obviously, it's difficult to be kind of going all the time. And so I think that, now that I've had a couple of years of being really busy in the space, in addition to coursework and work and all that, I think that I really can't overstate how important it is to like carve out time in your schedule for yourself, carve out like an hour-long lunch break and plan to go on a walk or something, or making sure that you have the time in your schedule to go to a friend's birthday party. It's really important not only to schedule in the professional-esque things, but also to schedule in the social things. I just really can't overstate, like, you need to give yourself a break. You need to recognize if you're on the brink of burnout and say, it's okay if I take a nap today instead of spending 2 hours writing this paper I was supposed to write. And it's okay to like move things around to accommodate for how you're feeling in that moment.
I love that what you said about, taking a walk on campus. There's so many places on and around campus where you can take a walk. And I don't think I ever would have thought about doing that as an undergraduate student. I would like walk through Coker Arboretum to get to class, but I don't think I ever thought about, just like sitting on a bench and hanging out there. That was never something that was on my mind.
It just gives you so much clarity too. And I especially love to be outside during the breaks. And it sounds kind of cheesy because of all of the sustainability stuff, but it's, the reason that I'm involved in all this work, one of the really core reasons is that I love nature and I want to protect it. And so at the same time, it's important for me to like go back and spend some time outside and spend some time with that when I'm feeling overwhelmed.
Something a lot of people have a hard time with is just like the mental load that comes with doing this specific work and hearing about climate change and hearing about, the dire consequences that are going to result. How do you manage to stay positive when you're learning about these things and you're writing about these things that are sometimes pretty scary, if we're being completely honest?
It's difficult, honestly. I think I've gotten a lot better about keeping a positive mindset with it. People will joke, they'll say, like, go outside and touch grass, but like, really go outside and touch grass, and you'll realize, like, it's scary, but it's like you can still be grounded, like, you're still here, the birds are still chirping, the sun's still gonna rise in the morning. I don't know. It's difficult because so much of it is bleak, but at the same time, there's so much good news. I work for an environmental policy lab right now. I do communications for them. And, sometimes their research findings are pretty bleak, but sometimes there's, a silver lining to those findings. Well, things are heading in this direction and they're bad, but there's still something that we can do about it. And here are all the solutions. And here are examples of people and cities and nations enacting these solutions. And this is what the solutions look like in practice. I think, it's important to be informed about the negative, but it's honestly, in my opinion, more important to stay informed on the positive, because you can't let yourself get bogged down, because then there can't be any progress. You need to be in the mindset of progress to be able to enact progress.
Working for an environmental policy lab must help you a lot with that. I wanted to talk about your work. Like, I've read your blog posts and you've contributed to a few different reports at this point. What has your time with the data-driven Enviro Lab been like?
It's been a really great experience for me. I don't see myself doing the research side of this, but at the same time, I'm really interested in the research findings and how we can implement those findings. And so I think that my position as the communications research assistant sets me up really well to, it's literally my job to understand cutting-edge climate policy research without having to be the one to actually do the data analysis. It's my job to interpret it and make it palatable and make it something that's easy for people who aren't climate policy experts to understand.
When you think about policy, the communicators are a huge component, in that work and sharing that work for the layperson. Your name was in the 2023 report on envisioning the future of non-state climate action. How do you break down complex topics?
Yeah, breaking down the complex topics is really something that I love doing. I love learning. I love to understand things. I think the biggest thing to do is to read. And the second biggest thing to do is to ask a lot of questions about what you're reading. I love this job because I have access to really, brilliant experts on this topic. Dr. Angel Hsu is brilliant in her work on climate policy. And so I'll read the report, and then if I have any questions, I can ask, one of the foremost global experts on the topic any clarifying questions. I'm somebody, I can be in a 200 person lecture hall and I'm not embarrassed to ask six questions in the same lecture. And I think that that's a really important energy to bring into the climate space because it's technical and it's complex. And we have to admit that we're not going to understand everything on the first try. And the only way to understand is to dig into the parts that we aren't understanding and be willing to be a little bit vulnerable and admit that we don't understand them.
What you just said about the 200 person lecture hall, I feel like that really gets at, why you're successful in what you do. Like, I would be very intimidated if I were a student to go up to, these leading climate experts. I know I shouldn't be, but, that's a scary thing. And I think for students interested in communications and journalism, that's often the hardest part is making those first connections and, figuring out how to talk to the experts and that sort of thing.
These experts are so passionate about their work. They want people to understand it. They want you to ask those questions because they want you to walk away knowing more than you did before you came to them. And so I think it can definitely be hard to ask experts these questions, but at the same time, that's why they do this work. And I think that you just really have to keep that mindset and know that they don't want to gatekeep this information. Mm-hmm. They want you as a communications person to understand it and to help other people understand it, because that's the whole reason that, a lot of people are doing this work in the first place.
If anybody takes anything away from this podcast, that was the thing that Ella just said you should take away from it for sure. The Data-Driven EnviroLab recently released a report on state, local, and regional climate commitments. And you actually have firsthand experience with local government starting at a very early age. So I would love to hear about, how you got involved in local government as a high schooler. And then we can talk about your involvement here in Chapel Hill.
So in getting involved with the Sustainability Advisory Board in Lake Oswego, Oregon, which is my hometown, when I was in high school, I really just wanted to try everything and get as much experience as I could. I had a friend who was applying for the Sustainability Advisory Board and encouraged me to also apply. So I did. And both of us got the position on the board together. Local climate action looks different everywhere you are. Some don't have advisory boards at all. Some advisory boards are more policy focused. Some are more development focused. This advisory board was definitely more policy focused, and I remember during my time there, we actually passed a mandated fee for plastic bags. It's, in the grand scheme of things, with all of our pollution and emissions problems, it's a pretty small thing to do, but at the same time, it's, a city of almost 40,000 people, and all of whom are disincentivized to use plastic bags whenever they go grocery shopping. And over time, effects like that compound. And so I think having that experience relatively early on, it just made me realize how much power there is at the local level to be able to influence these things. And another thing I realized is that there aren't enough young people involved in this side of climate action. I think sometimes what we don't realize is that the biggest difference we can make actually looks the smallest. It looks local.
How would you say Chapel Hill compares to your experience in high school in Oregon?
It's been different. So back in 2019, 2020, when I was on the Lake Oswego Sustainability Advisory Board, everybody was in person. Mm-hmm. The Environmental Stewardship Advisory Board, which is the Chapel Hill, board equivalent, is all remote, which has pros and cons, definitely. It means that it's much easier to make the meetings every time. Instead of having to drive somewhere, you can do it from the comfort of Davis or your own room or anything like that. But as far as like substantive policy, the town has actually been doing a restructuring on what the function of the board should be. So it's actually kind of in flux a little bit right now, but it used to be more development oriented. We would look at different developments, like a proposed plan for an apartment complex, and really evaluate them through an environmental lens, and then make recommendations to council that you should approve this development contingent on they add X, Y, and Z sustainability features. That is no longer our role at this point. We're transitioning to be more policy oriented. And so it's really in flex right now what ESAB's function is going to look like. It's definitely an open conversation at this point. It's not just the function of these boards and what local climate action looks like is not just fluid between places. It's also fluid over time. And obviously Chapel Hill is a college town. And I think that it's really great that they have my seat, a student seat available, because it shows that, you know, it's not just people who are full-time residents of Chapel Hill that get to have a say in this. Students and by proxy, the university also gets to have a say in what local climate action looks like.
And I think it says, going back to what you were talking about, how over time, what municipalities look like in terms of their local government, the fact that Chapel Hill is open to it evolving says something about their commitment to climate action. And I think you're right about, you know, what the university is working on in climate action, and now you're involved in the town of Chapel Hill and what they're working on. Having both of those views can really help expand like a person's outlook on what sustainability is for a community. Do you feel like, since you've got involved with the town of Chapel Hill, kind of how you look at sustainability has changed?
The biggest thing that I've learned through my time on the board is that the people who make the biggest changes and the people who have the most influence are not necessarily the people with the best and the brightest ideas, but they're the people that show up. The most important thing that you can do in terms of climate action is to continue to show up to things, continue to voice your opinions, continue to ask questions. Obviously, there can be structural and institutional barriers to that. A lot of folks older than my generation are the ones showing up to these meetings. They're the ones making public comment. And so I think it's just as important for people in my generation. If we want to have a seat at the table, we have to show up to a 7 p.m. planning meeting. We have to show up and voice our opinions and ask our questions, because somebody else is going to be there doing that. And you don't know if they're going to have the same expertise or the same drive for change or drive for progress.
Being there, yeah, that's a huge thing. And the fact that you are able to contribute because you have all of this knowledge is a huge benefit for the town of Chapel Hill.
It's really overlooked, the power of local government.
We're about to wrap up this conversation. It's been so great to have you. We talked at the top of the podcast how you're doing the plus 1 year. So can you tell us about, you know, your future plans 1 year down the line?
A year from now, I am still going to be in Chapel Hill continuing work in media and journalism. I am doing UNC Hussman's 1 year master's in journalism program with a focus in interactive design, which basically just means web and graphic design. So I'm really excited for that. I mentioned earlier in this podcast that I really enjoy sustainability communications and helping to fill those knowledge gaps and explain very technical, analytical climate and climate policy work to people who just want to know about the climate policy without having to understand all of the technicalities of it. I've been exploring that through writing at the data-driven lab, and I've really loved my time doing that, as well as environmental journalism classes in undergrad. And I'm excited to add another layer to that through my master's next year with being able to more visually communicate these things. Data visualization, interactive graphics, things like that are also really great tools to help people understand complex things like climate policy. And so I'm really excited to get more of those skills to be able to take those into a future career in sustainability.
As someone who went to journalism school myself and then now is in the communication space, the fact that you'll be able to portray these things with both text and visuals is a huge deal. We're constantly working to portray data at Sustainable Carolina with visuals that people understand. It's not an easy thing, and I think that's great that you're continuing on there to do that work. So thank you for being with us here today. We'll be back next month for the next installment of the Sustainable Carolina podcast.